Committee roll call, please.
Chair Page?
Here.
Vice Chair Carvalho?
Here.
Regent Lieberman?
Here.
Regent McAdoo?
Here.
Regent Moran? Regent Trachok? You have a quorum.
Thank you. Go to agenda item number one, public comment, starting in ELCO.
No public comment in ELCO at this time.
Thank you. Public comment in Reno?
Yes, we have one public comment in Reno.
Okay, thank you. If you could please state and spell your name for the record.
Dr. Anthony Slonim, S-L-O-N-I-M.
You're good. Go ahead, sir. Sir, can you hold on 1 minute? We can't hear you. I think the button's muted on your side, sir.
How about now?
We can hear you now. Thank you.
Good morning. I am Dr. Anthony Slonim, the president and CEO of Renown Health. As a physician and former nurse, I wanted to come here today to bring your attention to the challenges facing our community involving the number of RNs and their education. I also want to lend my support to a proposal to add a degree program of RNs to attain a Bachelor of Science in Nursing degree at the Truckee Meadows Community College. Our community is in crisis as it relates to both the availability and education of RNs to care for the sick and injured. Nevada has a deficit of 200 nurses per 100,000 population, which ranks Nevada as the second worst state nationally in per capita nurses. In addition, the number of licensed nurses in Washoe County has actually decreased by 300 nurses since 2018 for the first time in 10 years. Washoe County would need to increase the current number of nurses by 20%, and rural and frontier counties would need to increase by 82% just to meet national per capita standards. The need for more nurses in our community cannot be overstated. We are not keeping pace with the healthcare demands that our communities need. There are more than ample clinical training slots available to schools to double the number of graduates in Northern Nevada. I'm here today to encourage additional thought about enhancing the number of nursing graduates throughout the state through our public colleges and universities, and let you know that Renown Health would be happy to partner in ways that could make that happen. In addition, while I know that our current associate degree nurses, or ADNs, are doing an outstanding job at providing care and support to our community, an associate's degree is the first step to a long and productive nursing career. It is only natural that many ADNs would want to continue their education for the benefit of their patients and to keep pace with a rapidly evolving industry standard. This was an important path for me in my own career as a graduate of a hospital-based school of nursing. As a business leader and longstanding partner of TMCC and all of the other nursing programs in our region, I know the value that can be added to the health and well-being of our community by expanding TMCC's current nursing program to include a Bachelor of Science in Nursing pathway and remain ready to help in any way that we can. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor, and thanks for your partnership. Seeing no other public comment in Reno, we'll go to public comment in Henderson. Seeing no public comment, we will close public comment. Go to agenda item number two for minutes. Do you have a motion for approval?
So moved.
Second. So moved.
From Regent Carvalho. Second from Regent Trachok. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Chair's report will just pass over to UNR and UNRV. Those reports are more important right now, so we'll go to agenda item number four, UNR School of Medicine report. Dr. Swank.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the Health Sciences Committee. Tom Swank for the University of Nevada Reno School of Medicine. You have my outline in front of you. I'd like to add a few points to that. I'll say that I couldn't decide whether to start with the coronavirus or end with the coronavirus. So I've decided to end with the coronavirus. So I'll have some comments about that at the end. I will begin actually with something not on the list, which is just to thank all of you for your selection of Dr. Kent Sanders and Dr. Wei Yan as distinguished researchers representing the NSHE system. We're very proud of their work. I will note that Dr. Sanders told me just 2 days ago that he has received yet another large NIH grant that is now his fourth, I think, which is essentially unheard of amongst investigators. So he has a very distinguished career, and I appreciate you recognizing that. Under general issues, the GIA Award of Excellence concerns a group called the Group on Institutional Affairs, which is a AAMC group amongst the many specialty groups in AAMC. They are responsible for marketing communications and institutional advancement. And they have an award competition for marketing and communications programs. And I'm proud to say that our marketing and communications team received the Bronze Award this past year for their program promoting the 50th anniversary of the medical school. This was in competition with 35 or so other programs from very large and elite institutions, and we competed very successfully at the bronze level, so we're very proud of that. Item 1B, an update on our relationship with the VA. We, as recently as last week, met with federal contractors who have been secured to investigate the nature of a new hospital project for the VA in Reno. And a major part of that proposal is for the VA and the School of Medicine to join forces in some fashion, co-branded, co-located, some type of integration of the school with the VA, not as an exclusive partner, but as a very unique partnership. We know of no other such partnership like that in the country. And that was received very favorably. Of course, there's a long ways to go between here and there in terms of how the federal contractors make their reports and the recommendations they make. But we do think that there's an opportunity for engaging with the VA as a major clinical platform for the school. Item 1C, just wanted to highlight that we have recruited an outstanding associate dean for biomedical research. We have two research leaders, clinical research and biomedical research. You remember that we announced Dr. Mark Riddle, who is our associate dean for clinical research. He is jointly appointed in the VA as the associate chief of staff for research. We've now recruited an associate dean for biomedical research, Dr. Lucia Natterpeck, who is a nationally recognized neuroscientist. She's chair of neuroscience at the University of Florida, and she will be joining us in late April. She brings her own lab with her and a very high level of accomplishment in the neurosciences, but also her leadership of all of our basic science programs. 1D, very timely, we have recruited Dr. Mark Pandori from California to be the new director of the State Public Health Laboratory. Dr. Pandori arrived in perfect timing to bring his expertise in microbiology and infectious diseases to the state as the director of the State Public Health Lab. He's very connected with the governor's task force, with Washoe County Health District, with the state health leaders to provide expertise with regard to the coronavirus. He's been all over the media in terms of educating the public about this. We are tracking this very, very closely with a SWAT team on campus that's managing our student affairs and our clinical practice affairs, especially now that the testing has been released to widespread use as opposed to limited public health use. And Dr. Pandori has been an incredible resource, and again, arriving at perfect timing. Because he was so engaged, we did not ask him to come here, but I will introduce him at the June meeting when we are up north. 1E, as some of you know, we have a turnover in our Senior Associate Dean for Administration and Finance. Dr. Jeremy Altop left in January, and we now have reengaged with Mr. Mike Herbert, who some of you remember from 2016-17 when he was here for a year as our interim Senior Associate Dean, very involved in the Las Vegas transition, very involved in negotiations with UNLV. He's now back as in that interim role. He will likely be here for several months while we recruit a new Senior Associate Dean for Administration and Finance. And that links to 1F, which is a recruitment for a Senior Associate Dean for Clinical Affairs. That the two positions are really joined at the hip with regard to managing our clinical enterprise. And as soon as we get the search launched for the Administration and Finance Dean, we'll do the same thing in Clinical Affairs. And then finally, under 1G, just to highlight that we continue to have tremendous energy devoted to building our culture, assessing our culture, improving our culture. We have some outstanding results from a recent faculty satisfaction survey that I think documents the success of those efforts in terms of a very high level of endorsement by our faculty in their satisfaction with the school and their careers at the school. So those are general issues. Let me talk about medical education a bit, little updates on medical student and PA admissions. Just to run some quick numbers, we had about 1,600 applications. We interviewed 340 applicants for medical school. We have acceptances out now. We're still kind of in play, as you know, but we have acceptances out to 80 students. They have very high GPA, 3.7, high MCATs of 510. Majority female, which is true across the country for medical schools nationally. 31% first generation, 28% underrepresented minority, both of which are highs for us and of which we are very proud. The PA recruitment is very interesting as well. They received 1,300 applicants for their 24 positions. They interviewed 89 students. 58% have a rural background, which is very important to us. Very high GPA for those students as well. So the admissions process is moving along, I think, very positively. With regard to graduate medical education, we continue to work with the new Sierra Medical Center, which is the new hospital being built by the Universal Health System, and we continue to explore new graduate medical education programs there. We continue to work with Renown Health. You just heard from Dr. Slonim, the CEO of Renown Health. We're exploring two new areas of collaboration, one in clinical research, integration between Renown, the VA, and the school, and the second in some integration with regard to obstetrical care. And third is the ELCO program, which continues to do well, although we continue to have challenges with regard to obstetrical supervision and obstetrical care, but that's kind of more of a citywide issue than a program issue specifically. Item four, clinical network development, a number of issues there. We did move our entire internal medicine department and clinical operations out of the Renown campus and to a new community-based facility kind of in Mid-Valley. Extremely successful move and outstanding facilities, great patient flow, very high patient acceptance, but it caused a big hit on the practice plan, and I'll actually foreshadow that update. The practice plan continues to have some financial difficulties. Through January, we have a deficit of a little over $1 million, and most of that is one time from the internal medicine move and from faculty recruitment. We have a bolus of new faculty members who are into their startup phase. We think that we turned the corner in January, and we hope to recover all or most of that. But I will say that the ceiling for our practice plan is really break even. Primary care practice plans are extraordinarily difficult. If you carve out primary care components of practice plans in medical schools around the country, they will all lose essentially because of reimbursement issues. So if we can get back close to break even, we will be pleased by that. Item 4B, the Moana building, we had great news there in that the bids came in under budget or under what we predicted and under earlier completion date. So we hope that we might take possession of a completely renovated new clinical facility in roughly October, maybe start to move in November or December, which is sooner than we might have expected. And again, at a lower cost with a local contractor. So that's very exciting for us. Item 4C, we did get invited by the Silver State ACO to join that ACO. That ACO, as some of you know, is mostly Las Vegas-based, but there's a component in Reno, and we are adding to the capacity for that ACO in Reno, and we're continuing to develop a business plan for our new facility in Northwest Reno. We are likely to build out endocrinology, weight management, diabetes, internal medicine, and pediatrics at that facility. Partnership update, we continue to explore with St. Mary's, with Carson Tahoe, with Community Health Alliance and others, the joint recruitment of faculty members. That has happened with Carson Tahoe. It's happened with CHA, and we hope to have a bolus of new faculty members with St. Mary's. And I already mentioned the practice plan. And finally, with research, I'll just reinforce again where I started, which is our basic science research enterprise continues to thrive. We have extraordinary investigators who continue to bring down huge grants and very successful programs that are being developed in a number of areas. We have a particular focus at the moment on muscular dystrophy and some exciting scientific developments there that may lead to some exciting funding opportunities. And then I'll finish again with the coronavirus and just say that, like everyone, and I'm sure at UNLV in particular, we are really trying to stay ahead of the breaking news. We have a SWAT team that we've convened that has a conference call in every morning at 8 o'clock where we sort of collect updates on the news. Most recently, as I mentioned, the news being that testing has now been released to full clinical use, which we believe is going to result in a huge demand by the patient population for tests without a travel history. And we're trying to figure out how to cope with that at the city level, at the institutional level, and at the practice level. I can talk more about that if you wish, but that's my report, Mr. Chair.
Any questions for Dr. Swank? Regent Cavallone.
Good morning, Dean Schwein.
Good morning.
Regarding the medical student admissions and the physician assistant admissions, can you tell us how many are from in-state and out-of-state?
Correct. Thank you for that. I should have mentioned that. As has been true for a long time with medical school, we run about 90-plus percent in-state, 6 or 7 or 8% out of state. So on that, on our number of 70, that usually results in about 63-ish or so in state and 7 out of state, plus or minus. It's interesting that you ask about the PA students because they actually had a drop off in Nevada applicants, and we think that we sort of tapped out some pool of interest by Nevada applicants, and we're getting more out-of-state applicants, particularly California. But interestingly, that has bumped the proportion of students who have rural backgrounds, which is very positive for us. So I think we're getting not just a widespread out-of-state interest, but a very targeted out-of-state interest from rural California to some extent.
See no other questions. Thank you, Dean Swank.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We go to agenda item number 5, UNLV School of Medicine, Dr. Files.
Good morning. My name is John Files. I'm your dean of UNLV School of Medicine, and I'd just like to thank the Health Science Systems Committee for inviting me to speak today. I'm going to start with coronavirus as opposed to end with it because the first case of coronavirus was identified in southern Nevada in the last 24 hours, and that patient is at the VA hospital now. I'll tell you that we pre-prepared all of our releases to go out on this day, so they will begin to circulate, and we've been practicing at UMC for whatever influx of patients we'll have and whatever isolation techniques we need to use. So we've rehearsed and prepared for this, and we'll have to see how far it goes in the community. So, under announcements, I will tell you that Dr. Mark Kahn from Tulane has been named as the permanent choice for dean, and he will arrive and begin his duties in the 1st of April. So we're very much looking forward to him. And we have things in very good working order for him to take over. The School of Medicine is also going to have a its first ever awards event. As you know, we're 2 years and about 8 months old. And next year will be our first graduating class, but we're going to begin the first ever award ceremony, and we'll hold that in a few weeks in March. So that's a really highly anticipated event. And we're pleased to announce that we're able to recruit a director of development who's Annette Carter, and she's begun her work in earnest and is doing quite a good job refreshing relationships with our donors and finding new ones. And We couldn't be more pleased to have her on board. Our admissions for the class of 2024 are complete and letters are out. We had 1,800 applicants. Of that, we had 271 Nevada applicants for our 60 spaces. We are anticipating a full class, and GPA is up to 3.7, and MCAT scores are up at 514. So very strong and very competitive class. That'll bring our total to 240 students, 60 in each year, and both our matriculation and retention are going quite well. So we look forward to next year on May 7th holding the first commencement for the School of Medicine. The second year class takes the National Board of Medical Examiners Step 1 exam as a benchmark, and we have 25 of the students in that who have completed that. And all 25 of 25 have passed and, in fact, posted an average score of 241, which puts them in the top third in the nation. We're hoping as the remainder of the class goes through that we can solidify that position and continue to do well. Under graduate medical education, we now have 325 residents in 25 fully accredited training programs, and we're very keen on expanding our GME footprint to accommodate the graduating students as they come out next year. We've got a record number of applicants to all of our GME programs and are looking forward to March 20th, which is match day, to find out who will be joining us for the coming academic year. Two important, three important GME events. One is that critical care medicine is expanded largely in the area of medical and pulmonary ICU as well as surgical ICU. The geriatrics program is brand new. They've recruited two fellows to begin in August. And pediatric emergency medicine has been under construction, as it were, for a long time, but has finally recruited two fellows that will start. And we couldn't be more pleased about that. It's a very important new program for us. This year, more than 20 of our residents were invited to national meetings to present their research, and our citation rate is up significantly from past years. The medical education building is well underway. We've been working with architects TSK and Co. and came up with a 125,000 square foot medical education building that would meet the needs of classes of 120 per year. And we are turning that work over now to the Development Corporation that will be building the building. And all of the necessary steps and agreements have been put in place. And they are planning to break ground, and they actually plan to be building in February of 2021, which is not that far away. And they have a four-year completion date. So by 2025, they plan to have the building open. And that's about as much as I know for the moment, as they are arranging the rest of the details. The school they are planning will have the ability to expand up to 180 students per year if required. And we're very, very keen on making sure that we can bring the students as well as the academic faculty and leadership all into the same medical education complex. I'm going to pause here and ask Dr. Gardner, our Senior Associate Dean for Clinical Affairs, to present the financials, and I will take any questions that you might have before I leave the podium.
Any questions for Dr. Fowles? Vice Chair DeBrava.
Thank you, Chair Page. Dean Fowles, I understand that Mark Kahn will be starting April 1st as the dean, if I'm not mistaken.
That is correct, yes.
I just want to take a minute to give you a thank you for coming forward and serving as dean. My understanding is you'll be returning to the Department of Surgery at the School of Medicine?
That's correct.
And that's fantastic news, because from everything that you've done when you were serving with the UNR School of Medicine, that we're delighted to still have you at the UNLV School of Medicine and University Medical Center. So thank you for your job.
That was my pleasure.
morning. Michael Gardner, Vice Dean, Clinical Affairs for the record, Chair Page. First of all, I would echo Dr. Brava's remarks. The faculty have been very appreciative of Dr. Files' efforts as acting dean, and he's been a steady hand in these interim times, and we much appreciate it. Some highlights of where we are with the Clinical Affairs and Finance. Grant a Gift is the foundation that is a principal funder of our Ackerman Center, which is our autism clinic. They've committed to a $1 million, actually slightly more than that, grant for this year. That's a significant increase in funding from the prior year. That will push us closer to the autism clinic being break-even, not yet break-even, but closer to that. We also have our cash collections have increased significantly from FY20 to from FY19 to FY20. I will say that in December, for example, we are seeing more patients. In December, we saw 1,000 more patients than we did in the prior December. In January, while there's been a lot of discussion about coronavirus, what's really affected us in a great deal has been the flu season. Many of you know that this has been a particularly bad flu season with 60,000 deaths across the United States with over 120 children and literally, you know, hundreds of thousands of cases. Las Vegas has been no exception to that, and while that is bad for health, it's actually not necessarily bad for the practice plan, as we've seen a significant increase in patients and a significant increase of inpatients, where we take care of patients who are admitted to UMC and Sunrise and other locations who've had the flu, as well as obviously a lot of other things. So we've seen an increase in our hospital encounters, as well as our outpatient clinics. In fact, we're expecting that we're going to have a record month when we do the final count for the visits in January, and I look forward to sharing that with you. Going through the first, as of November, we now have December finances. Going through the year, where we're on pace with a bunch of different things that are occurring, we are projecting approximately a $4 million loss, give or take $250,000. We're cautiously optimistic that we are. And our goal is to be under 3.7. Why that number? Because that would be a 50% cut of our deficit from last year. And we're cautiously optimistic that we'll be able to obtain that. There's a lot of different things. We had a particularly good month of January, and I'm looking forward to sharing that with you at the June meeting. But these finances, based on when we turned things in, was for the first 5 months. But December was actually better. And so when you multiply that out and march that through with some of the other things that are occurring, we are expecting, give or take, around $4 million. That's, we are seeing increases in our patients. We are seeing increases in our hospital visits, our doctors. We have our first reports of our doctor productivity. In spite of rumors to the contrary, we do have a, you know, we on our productivity, we use national standards for productivity. When you look at our physicians, for every one doctor who's below the 30th percentile, we have three who are above the 70th percentile. We have a lot of doctors who, when you look at their RVUs, are actually quite busy. And we're not paying at the 70th percentile. We actually usually pay below the 50th. Reimbursement in Nevada is notoriously low, but as far as actually seeing patients and doing RVUs, our doctors are actually quite busy. That would be the end of my report. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Gardner. Any questions for Dr. Gardner? Appreciate the update. Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, we'll go to agenda item number 6, nursing workforce development in Nevada.
Good morning, Chairman Page, members of the committee. My name is Caleb Cage. I'm the Assistant Vice Chancellor for Workforce Development and Community Colleges at the System of Higher Education. I'm pleased to present today with my colleague, Dean Amber Donnelly, the Dean of Health Sciences and Human Services at Great Basin College. And today we're going to talk a little bit about the nursing workforce in Nevada. I'll begin with a very high-level discussion of what we're doing what we propose to do at the system level, the system of higher education level for workforce development. And I will be keeping my remarks brief so that Dean Tinelli can tell you about what's going on at the institutional level as an example of the sorts of things that are going on at our colleges and universities with respect to nursing here in the state of Nevada. So here on this slide, as you're aware, the System of Higher Education approved 5 strategic goals. And one of those goals dealt directly with workforce development, stated specifically as read on this slide. The goal is to collaboratively address the challenges of workforce and industry education needs in the state of Nevada. In 2018, the Board of Regents approved this list of 10 in-demand occupations and added teachers as an additional in-demand career here. We've worked with the Governor's Office of Economic Development since this time. This list remains substantially the same from the economic development standpoint as it was approved by the Board of Regents in 2018. In order to discuss, or any effort to discuss, workforce development, capacity building, and building outcomes in the state should begin with a landscape analysis that compares the data of industry demand with the data for the number of graduates the institutions are producing on a regular basis. There are quite a number of data sources that we could pull from this. Over these next few slides, I'm going to provide just snapshots of some of this data. It's not heavily synthesized data, but data from specific sources that that show some of the nursing and healthcare needs here in the state of Nevada before we get into what NSHE is planning to do for them. I'd like to apologize in advance for this slide. I used old data on this as I was compiling them. This is not current data, and this was completely my fault, and I apologize for that, let alone misspelling the name of the database it came from here. The next slides here, starting on slide 4, provide a snapshot or various snapshots of the nursing needs and nursing workforce development in the state of Nevada over the last decade plus. This slide shows the number of licensed registered nurses per 100,000 population in Nevada from 2008 to 2018. Although the population grew significantly during this period, the number of licensed registered nurses per 100,000 population increased for most of that time and ended 2018. Increased as well. Where the previous slide showed the nursing, the RNs, licensed RNs per 100,000 population, this slide shows the actual numbers from 2008 to 2018 of licensees by county, by region, and at the state level. As you can see from the last line on the far right, the percent increase for the state of Nevada over this 10-year period was about 24%, which is a substantial increase and likely reflects the Board of Regents' focus on nursing and the institution's focus on producing nurses throughout the state. This slide shows not just nursing. This data is common data that Dr. John Packham from the University of Nevada, Reno provides. On a regular basis on what it's going to take in selected nursing and other allied health professions to meet national averages. As you can see under select allied health, where we have some cushion in the areas of magnetic resonance image techs as well as medical assistants, but in most other areas we are in need in with respect to the national average, just to meet the national average. The first three columns show population per 100,000, and the second two, the last two columns, are the actual numbers, specific needs in each field. This data is from 2019, but again, it shows a snapshot of the sort of workforce challenges we're facing here in the state. So based on this data and other data sources that we have developed and been working with, not developed, but we've been working with at the system, we've proposed and developed what we refer to as the NSHE Workforce Development Education Initiative. Given that nursing remains a high priority for the board and a high workforce need here in the state of Nevada. Nursing is an element of this initiative. In developing this initiative, we identified key challenges, deliverables to address those challenges, and a methodology to ensure we were making progress while receiving key programmatic input and oversight from the board, from this subcommittee and others, and other important bodies throughout the state. As you can see from this slide, we've identified five key challenges that need to be addressed from a workforce development education standpoint. We need a comprehensive statewide strategic plan. Again, the institutions are doing remarkable work with respect to workforce development. The institutions have developed workforce strategic plans and implemented those plans, and this is calling for a way to coordinate and facilitate those plans throughout the state at the system level. Uniform and objective data is necessary so that we can not only address our current needs in the state, statewide, again, state-level data, but also be able to project data and project needs in the future. Clear, comprehensive understanding of the workforce development policy and funding structures in the state, as well as a business case that we can share with private philanthropy and use for the development of grants in the state going forward to address workforce development needs. It's important to note that none of this suggests that the important work being done by the institutions is in any way inadequate. Rather, it suggests that the great work that is being done at the institutions can be built upon and coordinated to make sure we're all working towards the same workforce development goals as a single system going forward. In order to address the challenges, we've developed five deliverables that we'll be working for over the next few months. These include a comprehensive statewide strategic plan that incorporates aspects of the institutional strategic plans for workforce development, a method to leverage INSHE and external research capabilities to provide for projections, workforce projections on and current workforce needs in the state, policy and budget recommendations for implementing this plan. It's important to point out that the budget process is already well underway from the Board of Regents perspective, and these budget recommendations will not conflict with those nor try to usurp those in any way. Rather, they may serve as a foundation for future recommendations or future or private philanthropy needs going forward as well. Funding, a description of the funding and operational structure of workforce development in the state, and then finally a business case that suggests to our external partners what we're doing and how they can assist us. My final slide here before handing it over to Dean Dinelli. In order to develop these deliverables and address these challenges, we've developed this initiative, the Workforce Development Education Initiative, that's composed of three strategies that cover the educator pathway, the nursing pathway, and what we're referring to as the emerging pathway. The nursing pathway is embedded in this. We're working with the deans and directors of the nursing institutions throughout the state to identify what the needs are, to identify how we're going to address those challenges and work together in order to do so, which is similar to the other efforts underway in the other pathways. And my job is to pull all of these together and make sure they're coherent and make sure we're all pursuing reasonable and realistic goals going forward, and we have an action plan for doing so. At this time, I'll be followed by Dean Dinelli, who will be able to provide you an overview of the efforts underway at Great Basin College.
Good morning. For the record, Dr. Amber Dinelli, Dean of Health Science and Human Services. It's a pleasure for me to be here and talk to you guys about what we're doing to impact the workforce. I'm specifically directed towards nursing in rural Nevada. So one of the things that I would like to talk to you guys today about is about the education desert. The education desert is considered something that is specific to attending a school that's further than 30 minutes or 30 miles away. This is particularly true in rural environments, where we're looking for students to want to access these resources, but research indicates that they won't do that if it's greater than that distance. So we really need to think about how we can impact the skills specific to our students who are in those healthcare roles and give them the tools that they need to increase resources. So what we have to look at is population, geography, and financial ability. In doing that, we know that our population of students in rural Nevada is really diverse. What you see in Elko is going to be unique from what you see in, say, Pahrump or Winnemucca. The population itself that live and work there are each unique. And so we're looking at our student populations differently at each one of those locations and how we're targeting them and how we're reaching out to them. And one thing that we know that's absolutely true is that students like to see other students that are like them. And so we specifically utilize our student populations that, let's say we have a Hispanic student who's been very successful in our program, targeting students that are like that individual and saying, you can do this, I did this, this is how we did it. The other thing is setting students up for success. Our students have had an increase, our program overall, 38% of our students are ESL. Would be very, very bad practice for us to go ahead and take students and not put anything in place for them because we know they're ESL learners. So we put things together like an ESL toolkit to make sure that those students are successful. The other thing that we added is intrusive advising, where our students are really with certain faculty throughout our program to help them as they're going through each semester. Anything that happens to come up, those faculty help them work through that. One of the things that we started trying this year with those ESL learners is we took in some retired nursing faculty to work with our ESL students, because sometimes it's just context, understanding terms within a textbook. And for an example would be like understanding the word route. A route that you're going to give a medication means it's either oral or IM or you're giving it IV. For an ESL learner, that might be a confusion. They look up and they Google route and what comes up, but like directions to something, you know. And so really learning that terminology, that's been very effective. But it's one of the things that you absolutely need to consider. The other part is that financial stability. Getting students into our program, the first thing they're going to ask is, where am I going to come up with the money? So we've done a lot of forecasting and planning. One of those things is making sure that we have scholarships. So in our associate degree program alone, we have 53 scholarships. 110,000 of that comes every single year from the William N. Pennington Foundation, because they are invested in our rural students and making sure that they're successful. When we added the nursing program in Pahrump and Winnemucca, we did that with a TACT grant, $2.2 million is what that price tag was for that. That's a lot of money to develop those programs. We're in year five of that. One of the things that we knew right off the bat in year two was that program in Winnemucca did not have the space. Immediately we identified different resources and who was one of our big supporters but William M. Pennington Foundation, and so we submitted, GBC submitted a grant and was awarded $5.5 million towards building a new health science and technology building. I add the technology piece in there because it's important in rural environments to not look and focus on one program. One way to make those programs successful is to partner with other programs within the college, and we did that with the technical side and looking at the electrical program and how we could have a building that's a dual function. So that's been very successful. The other thing that added was mining money to help us get to our $7 million mark for that building. The other thing is investment from the community. The hospital at Humboldt General is very invested in making sure that they have healthcare providers for their community, and so they gave us $1 million towards that building. We had to think outside of the box. Because our program was mainly housed in Elko, we needed to think of new ways that we were going to be able to educate these students in other locations but still use the same technology. And so we came up with a synchronized learning where those students learn from different faculty. They still do student groups. We still do team-based testing, team-based learning, all of those things that we were doing, but we use it with technology. So this is just an example of some of our students and what they look like as they're testing, or even just having a class. Each one of our locations has a full lab set up with full simulations, so students experience the same exact skills and simulation that they would in any environment. And I put a thing in here, coming fall 2020 is ELE. Again, we know that this is an area that needs education. They don't have healthcare providers. They have a lot of travelers, and the hospital and just even their medical units are really stretched thin. So how do you make that happen? It's a lot of planning, and it's those partnerships. So we partnered with William B. Ryrie Hospital and they agreed to give us a salary for a nursing faculty for 5 years. They also put in a grant with the governor for the Office of Science and Innovation and Technology, and they were awarded $200,000. That money will fund the equipment that we need at that location to start this program and make it successful. The next thing I just wanted to talk about was our pass rates. Our pass rates are strong, and we just were ranked number one as the number one nursing program based off of data. This data is specific to NCLEX pass rates over a five-year period. Why is this super important? It means that our distance education and the technology that we use at Great Basin College is effective and good. These students that are learning at multiple locations through this modality are successful. We also retain, you can see that over the last 4 years, we're retaining our students and they're staying within our communities and within Nevada, also very, very important. And our job placement rates generally rate from 100% to 96%. So they pass NCLEX. They're usually employed before they even pass NCLEX in rural environments, and they're staying within Nevada. All very, very positive things. We talk about program, our program by the numbers. Those partnerships are super important. We have numerous affiliation agreements, and all of that success, all of that community support from each one of these locations are where those students are completing clinical. Again, a big factor in our success. The other thing is setting students up, those ones that are financially taxed, to be successful. And so Thelma Trace Cardes was a woman that was in a care center in Nevada in Elko, and she left a legacy fund. So her legacy fund buys all of the scrubs for those students within the first year. So none of those students pay for that. We also got a legacy fund from the Uristi family. Their daughter was killed in the medevac accident that we had in Elko about 3 years ago. So every single one of our nursing students is given a stethoscope from that family. So again, setting those students up for success and utilizing those funds in a way that's very beneficial to them. We talk about the bachelor's degree. We have an RN to BSN. The majority of our students go on into our BSN program. They do that within a three-year span. Some of them go directly in, and then we retain them either within the second or the third year. We talk about our bachelor's degree before those students even enter our associate degree. This is super important. Our nursing programs are competitive to get into, and so in order for them to get in, we encourage them to take these additional gen ed classes that they're going to need in their bachelor's program. They generally take three by the time that they get in. They can take three additional courses in our bachelor's program when they're in the associate's degree, so they're six classes ahead. So by the time they graduate with their associate degree, they literally have 1 year, and they're done with that bachelor's degree. They're already acclimated to our environment. And they are acclimated to what that bachelor's degree is going to look like. The other thing that we are working with is the new GBC Fast Track with UNR. Obviously, we are short nurse practitioners. When we increase our numbers in nursing programs, the other side of it is that there aren't the nurse educators. And so when I have an open position, I'm lucky if I get two applicants because they're rare to come by. And a lot of the students that are going on to graduate programs are going on and they're becoming nurse practitioners. But this pathway will allow our students that once they enter our RN to BSN track to complete three classes with UNR and be enrolled in one of their five graduate tracks. One of those is also that MSN in education, which is particularly important for us and recruitment purposes. So GBC is the gold standard in the Silver State, and we're doing really great things out in our rural environments, and I would really like to say thank you for allowing me to share that today.
Thank you for that presentation. Are there any comments or questions from the board?
Yes, I have a question.
Go ahead.
And this is of Caleb. Kayla, what is the greatest need in the state right now for nurses? Is it for RNs or is it for of bachelors?
Thank you for the question, Regent Trachuk. This is Caleb Cage for the record. As I was saying earlier regarding the data, there are a number of data sources that we have that to pull from, and the registered nurse programs that we have here in the state. Statewide, there are 724 per population of 100,000 in the state, and in Clark County alone, that's 704. So the needs for additional RNs are significant here in the state, and I would have to go back and develop some more data and talk to some of the experts here in the state on data to provide specific details on that. I'm happy to do that following this. And Amber, do you have any specific input from Great Basin?
There's some confusion sometimes what the difference is between a bachelor's prepared nurse and an associate prepared nurse. Bachelor's or associate degree nurses take the same NCLEX to become a nurse and work within a hospital setting. So I just am clarifying that those two things are identical. The difference between going on for that RN to BSN, it's the other pieces that, because an associate degree, we have four semesters really to try and cram everything in there on their skills and critical thinking. Some of the things that they don't get as much focus on that they do get in a bachelor's program are things like leadership, community, specific things towards informatics and looking at data, understanding data. And we know that the IOM did release a report saying that statistically patients have better outcomes with nurses that graduate from a bachelor's degree. And it's one of the reasons why there's a big push that by 2020 that you're really encouraging all associate degree grads to be enrolled or plan to be enrolled in an RN to BSN program so they can get those additional pieces.
Thank you. Caleb, so would it be possible for us to get the data to show what the demands are both for the RNs and the BSNs in the state by county?
This is Caleb Cage for the record, Regent Trachuk. I could certainly provide that following this meeting.
And then would it be also possible from your perspective to provide to the board those institutions that are best suited to provide the education for each of these two programs?
Regent Trachuk, this is Caleb Cage for the record. I'd be happy to put together a report of the needs and what the institutions are providing and suitability.
Thank you.
Thank you. Regent McAdoo?
Yeah, I just had a... I've had a lot of thoughts about this. As you can imagine, I've done a lot of reading through the health science agenda and serving on the hospital board in Elko. I pay attention as best I can to that. So I've just written a comment that I would like to share, if I may. And that is that I think there's an overarching concern for every one of us in this room and in the rooms in the outlying areas that we have a shortage of nurses in Nevada and across America. And just like every other profession, the more education a person has, the higher the education level, the continuance of learning will most likely provide a stronger and skilled workforce within our state. Each of us in this room is here today because we know and understand the value of higher education, which is one level of education followed by another level, followed by another level, also known as a degree, also known as lifelong learning. So I don't think that a person working in healthcare can be overeducated or overqualified to take care of those that I love. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent McAdoo. Any other questions or comments? No. Thank you for your presentation. All right. On to item number 7, TMCC proposed RN to BSN program. In the effort of keeping us on time, can I limit you to 10 minutes, please?
We'll try our best.
Thank
so,
you.
Karen Hilgerson for the record, and I'm going to take just a couple of minutes to tee Dean and Dr. Julie Ellsworth up for this presentation. So TMCC currently offers an associate degree in nursing, which you just learned about. We call that an ADN. And just one additional point of clarification, many of the students have to complete their sciences prior to being admitted into an ADN program. And that, so it really does take about a year of preparation, and you have to get very high marks in biology, anatomy, and physiology, and some other courses as well. But so listening to our community partners and regional development organizations, it's become apparent there's a dire shortage of ADN bedside-level nurses. The shortage will be made more complicated in 2021 when a brand-new hospital opens, Northern Nevada Medical. They will be seeking 450 new nursing positions for that one hospital in our community. TMCC would like to be able to expand the current ADN program. To do that, we have to address an issue. The cost of educating nurses is not fully covered by state funding, not even close, even when state funding and tuition are added together. Many larger class size programs subsidize nursing and other health career programs, such as a large history class or a large psychology class. And even athletics is helping to subsidize programs like this because we're actually generating positive revenue, indirect and direct. So it's a balance. It's a balance to run high-quality, excellent healthcare programs. We can no longer keep that balance if we are expected to add more seats in ADN programs, and frankly, our community is expecting us to add more seats in ADN programs. Many ADN students are not transferring to the university. They're going out of state. They're enrolling in private or online programs. You'll hear those specific numbers in a moment. About a year ago, College of Southern Nevada was approved to offer an RN to BSN program. The TMCC nurses got very excited about this and started working on the curriculum and all of the planning that's needed to have a high-quality program. So we will be asking to do the same in June. We will be utilizing existing faculty who are already qualified to teach upper-level courses. Nursing faculty at TMCC have reached out to former ADN students to see if they would like to continue their nursing education with an online program at TMCC to receive their BSN. The response and interest are overwhelmingly yes. The revenue generated from TMCC's RN to BSN program, an online cohort model of 60 students, will open 32 new spots in the existing ADN program, allowing us not only to better meet the need for bedside level care or RN care in the community, but also upskill existing graduates and keep people along that path of lifelong education. With that, I'll turn it over to Dean Julie Ellsworth.
All right. Thank you. Julie Ellsworth, Dean of Sciences, Truckee Meadows Community College. So thank you for this opportunity to introduce our proposal, the TMCC RN to BSN program. And as you know, there are options in INCHI already where associate's degree RNs can earn their bachelor's degree. So CSN, Nevada State, Great Basin, UNR, and UNLV all have great programs. But the bottom line is that TMCC students are not attending these programs, and they are not reaching the bachelor's level at an acceptable rate. So the TMCC RN to BSN proposal is designed for TMCC nursing grads so they can reach their next level of education in an environment where they have already been successful. How do I change a slide? Next slide. No. This one here. Okay. Thank you. I was going to be joined today by Dr. Ellen Hausch. She was unable to be here, so I will do my best to convey the thought and the care that's gone into developing this proposal, which has been on the INCHI planning report since 2018. The nursing faculty at TMCC care deeply about their students and are in tune with the challenges that they face. Students might struggle with concepts or how to deal with a scenario, or they may be dealing with unreliable transportation, problems with childcare, or the like. So the nursing profession requires so much: highly specialized knowledge and skills, compassion, strong ethics, and professionalism. So becoming an RN is a difficult challenge, and our faculty are there to help our students reach their goals. As the Dean of Sciences, I oversee nursing and TMCC's other allied health programs. I was a biology professor before becoming dean, so I am not a nurse. I want our graduates to be the best nurses they can be for themselves professionally, for our community, and for myself, my family, and my friends. I've lived in Nevada for 28 years, and these are the nurses who take care of me and my children and my parents, and obviously I want them to be the best. So here's the challenge or the problem. Very few TMCC nursing graduates are completing RN to BSN degrees, 20%, fewer than 20% between 2013-2018. So they earn their ADNs, they become registered nurses, and they enter the workforce. Hospitals need these entry to practice RNs, and as you heard from Dr. Slonim, they readily hire our graduates. However, the bachelor's level training is becoming the industry standard. And in 2011, the Institute of Medicine recommended by this year, 2020, 80% of all nurses be bachelor level trained. And they recommend this because the increased training results in better care, it lowers costs, and it provides better patient outcomes. So few TMCC students are completing the RN to BSN programs, and very few are attending INSHE programs. This circle here on the slide represents the 55 TMCC nursing graduates who completed RN to BSN between 2013 and 2018. So over half of them earned their degrees at private or out-of-state institutions, 19 in that 5 years completed at UNR, and 6 completed in those 5 years at Nevada State College. So that's 25 students in 5 years completing at INSHE institutions. More than those 25 started, many did not finish. It's not saying anything about these programs. The INSHE programs are great. They continue to get better and better. But they are not the same fit as continuing on at an institution you already know with faculty who already know you. Training the entry to practice registered nurses is expensive, and all of the associate's degree programs in Nevada are relatively flat in the number of graduates being produced, shown in this slide. So this graph shows the number of graduates each year from 2015-16 to 2018-19 for CSN, the top line, then TMCC, WNC, GBC. So in 18-19, INSHE programs graduated 350 associate's degree RNs, and for that year alone, 280 of them would need to be upskilled to the bachelor's level to reach the Institute of Medicine's recommendations. So that's for 1 year. And these ADN graduates are joining a statewide workforce where only 55% of our current RNs are prepared at the bachelor's level or higher. There is so much work to be done. So there are so many ADNs in our community who need to upskill. We propose to do our part to increase the level of care in our community and to begin to replace the experience we are losing as the baby boomer nurses are retiring. We want to increase the educational attainment of TMCC nursing grads through an efficient and comfortable and affordable pathway to keep them on track to obtain their BSN without disrupting current employment. The TMCC RN to BSN program will also generate revenue to fund more spots in the ADN program, bringing more entry to practice nurses to our local workforce. More about this in a minute. Our proposal focuses on upskilling our graduates to increase quality of care, and more bachelor's level nurses mean more students are prepared to go on to graduate programs at UNR and UNLV to expand that pipeline of nursing educators that we need to prepare the next generation. So in a nutshell, we have at full capacity a proposal for two cohorts of 30 students each per year. Classes will be online in 8-week modules, recruitment focused on TMCC current and recent grads, and no additional full-time faculty are needed for this proposal. This has been on the INSHE planning report since 2018, and the need has increased since then. With a continued local growth and new hospital coming on board, RN to BSN programs in the state, we could add this one, we could all double our output, and the need would still not be met. We hope to serve our students as well as Great Basin Colleges serving their students. So over the last 3 years, GBC has accepted 65 applicants to their RN to BSN program, and 86% of them came from the GBC's associate degree graduates. That's an inspirational number that we would aspire to. We know that the students make their educational choices based on many things. We want to offer an option with familiar faculty in a comfortable environment that's cost-effective and is seamless in transition with as few barriers as possible. The TMCC RN to BSN program will increase options for students. Most TMCC students stay close to home, with fewer than 5% of our graduates settling outside of Nevada. Our nursing students are diverse, and this program will increase the diversity of educational options that they have to choose from. The foundation of our proposal is faculty support and connecting with students even while they are working on their ADNs, and building on these established relationships so students have the confidence to take the next step in their education and understand the importance of doing so. The TMCC RN to BSN program will generate revenue through state-funded weighted student credit hours and tuition. RN to BSN programs do not require expensive clinical time or simulation equipment. They are less expensive than entry to practice degree programs. The students are already practicing nurses, learning their craft in more depth at the leadership and management and critical thinking level. We estimate at full capacity the TMCC RN to BSN will generate $800,000 annually, or enough to fund 32 more associate's degree student spots for those entry-level to practice. So upskilling is important, but RN to BSN degrees do not add more entry-to-practice RNs to the workforce. Nevada needs to add an estimated 5,000 additional nurses to meet the national average per capita, and RN to BSN grads don't count toward that number. So an important part of our proposal is how it will allow us to increase the number of registered nurses in our local hospitals and clinics. And another critical need, as previously mentioned, is for nursing educators, master's level trained nurses who can educate future nurses as full-time or part-time instructors. Nursing faculty positions are notoriously difficult to fill. We need to increase that pipeline of nursing students pursuing graduate school, and the first step is to increase the number of students with bachelor's degrees. We also need to increase the diversity of this educator pipeline so our educators represent the communities that they serve. Affordability is a focus. Many TMCC students come from low-income backgrounds and grow up very price-conscious. Even newly employed ADN graduates who are making a good living focus on affordability and are very stressed about money. In a survey of TMCC nursing students, the most common answer to what they thought a reasonable cost would be for an RN to BSN program was around $5,000 or $6,000. The tuition and fee structure at the community college allows us to offer this option at a very affordable price. TMCC associate's degree graduates want to continue their education. I have four pages of student comments about how they support this offering to add an RN to BSN at TMCC. They mentioned all the same reasons that I've listed in my talk. Some of their quotes were that they would be in favor of this because of the familiarity with the campus and the resources. The cost, because it's local. Quote, I understand the expectations of the program already, and because I've had a very positive experience and have received a top-notch education at TMCC, I'd love to continue here. The TMCC nursing faculty have developed the curriculum. They're very excited to bring this on board if it's approved. Students may co-enroll in their last year of the ADN program, having an accelerated completion possibility, and we have high-level faculty already in place needed to teach the 300 and 400 level classes. We propose a spring 2021 launch for the program, and we'd be excited to serve the community in this way. So TMCC would like to serve the community by upskilling our ADN students and increasing the capacity of our ADN program. This will strengthen the pipeline of qualified healthcare providers in the workforce and qualified applicants into graduate programs. If we don't serve our students, they will continue to go to private and out-of-state institutions. We'd like to keep them here. We believe our proposal will increase the educational attainment of our students and do so within the NC system. Thank you, and I'm happy to try to answer any questions.
Thank you. Okay, so we'll move on to UNR's presentation.
Thank you. For the record, Deborah Thomas, Dean of the Orvis School of Nursing at UNR. I'll figure it out. Yes, no? The green button. Wrong green button. I think it's pretty clear from now that there's a nursing shortage in Nevada. And in the interest of time, and you look like you're starving, I'll move quickly through the slides. I do want you to know what we at UNR at the Orvis School of Nursing are doing to help meet the workforce demand for nurses. Just this January 2nd, 2020, we established a new accelerated second degree BSN. This is a program for students that have a bachelor's degree in another field. We took 24 students into this program in January. They will graduate in December of 2020 with a bachelor's degree in nursing. We are planning to admit 32 students next January to start next January, pending approval from the State Board of Nursing for the increase in enrollment. Clinical placements, currently days and occasional nights, is always an issue, so we are exploring scheduling more clinical time from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. to allow for expansion of our programs. The State Board of Nursing approved a resolution in December of 2019 that up to 50% of clinical time can be used in simulation. We built out a simulation suite at the Redfield campus in South Reno in the fall of 2019 before this was approved, so we were a little ahead of the curve. We hired a PhD-prepared nurse who's certified in simulation with 20 years of experience in simulation, and we are using simulation for clinical hours, and we're going to use that to increase enrollment in our pre-licensure program so that we are able to make more RNs to meet the need. We're partnering, as Amber said, with Great Basin for a seamless transition to our MSN programs to provide primary care providers to the rural areas and nurse educators to the rural areas. I'll skip through these. We have family nurse practitioners, psychiatric nurse practitioner, adult gerontology, acute care nurse practitioners, and beginning this fall, we'll have adult gerontology primary care nurse practitioners, a nurse generalist, and a pediatric acute care NP program to meet the primary care needs of Nevada. Our RN to BSN program is well established. It's fully online and has been since the early 2000s. We created a seamless matriculation process for NC Community College students. And for students graduating with an associate degree, an Associate of Science Nursing degree in AS, the Silver Core 1 through 8 is automatically met. Newly revised RN to BSN curriculum at Orvis, we satisfy the Silver Core for 9 through 14, all within the fully online nursing courses. And 30 credits are given for the associate degree nursing courses, and 30 credits are taken in the RN to BSN program. Some of the issues that I heard, I've been on board since July 2nd of 2018, and these are the things that I heard why students don't necessarily come to Orvis School of Nursing at UNR. Cost was one. They wanted better customer service. It was easier to satisfy prerequisites in other programs. They wanted a fully online program and the perception of competitive admission. So how we're responding for cost, we're decreasing our nursing differential fee from $156.75 per credit hour to $10 per credit hour. Because these programs, RN to BSN programs, are much less costly to administer, we didn't feel it was right to subsidize other programs on the backs of those students. So we've decreased the rate to $10 a credit hour. Since the program is totally online, we're looking to waive other university fees associated with on-campus students.
quick that we are on a time limit.
I'm working fast.
Okay, this will be coming back to ARSA for a vote. Okay. So this is information only.
Okay, so we've hired a full-time program officer and advisor to meet with the need for customer service. We just, as a matter of fact, enrolled 10 new RN to BSN students this week. Lisa Thomas is a new program coordinator for that. Our curriculum meets Silver Core 9 through 14. There's now a minimum GPA to get in of 2.5, and we have a concurrent enrollment option for students who have completed half of their associate degree. UNR program has been fully online since the early 2000s, and some of the issues that I heard were that courses at the university to meet the Silver Core were not easy to get online, and so we've solved that problem by making them nursing courses. There's no cap on the number of students that we admit, so the competitive admission is a misnomer. There's no waiting list. We admit all qualified applicants, and there's concurrent enrollment. So, questions?
Are there any questions from the board? Thank you. I apologize for pushing you through. Okay. Any other comments or questions regarding this agenda item?
I didn't know if UNLV was going to chime in, or I know we're on time constraint, but it's kind of an important issue before we say, oh, this is just going to be taken up in a vote at a different committee at a later date.
Yeah, if I may, very briefly, Marta Miana for the record. For me, what this raises is just an important issue for the board, generally speaking, in terms of having a strategic approach where we truly examine where it makes sense to duplicate programs, where it doesn't, where we're just shifting revenues from one institution to another. Clearly, UNLV is living next to two online RN BSN programs already. So, but I do think it raises an important issue about how we as a system become kind of strategic about the offerings and whether the distribution of those offerings makes sense in general.
Thank you. Regent Carvalho, I also have a comment I'd like to make.
Yes, go ahead, Regent Drachuk.
I think if we're going to be a system, then we need to act as a system and make sure that we are focusing our limited resources on those programs at those institutions that can best serve our student populations. We have to make sure that these decisions are being driven by data, and I think it would be very important for us first to get the results of this report that was mentioned by Caleb before we start jumping into adding new programs that duplicate programs at other institutions. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments? Okay. I'll move on to item number 8, new business. Is there any new business for Health Sciences System Committee? Nope. Item number 9, public comment. Is there any public comment in Reno?
There is none.
Public comment in Elko?
No public comment in Elko.
Any public comment in Henderson? Yes. This is for the Health Sciences System Committee. Yes.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Angela Amar, the Dean of the School of Nursing at UNLV, and really want to speak in support of my colleague at UNR, Dr. Deb Thomas. I do believe that you've heard all the data about how we have a shortage of nurses and not enough nurses, and that really contributes to not enough nursing faculty. And I think that as a system, thinking about how we can have synergy among the programs, better alignment of programs, not being duplicative, so that we have students who are at every level and we're increasing. And at UNLV, we did increase by 40% in our undergraduate program, and we're increasing in other programs, trying to meet the needs of the state. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Luis Ortega, and I'm a faculty member here at CSN. As many here in this room know, CSN faculty and CSN administration have reached an agreement in regards to collective bargaining salary. I want to take a moment to thank some folks here, Dr. Zaragoza, Dr. Martin, Patty Charton, and Mary Kay. I do appreciate their leadership, and now our goal is to finalize this contract as soon as possible. I also want to thank the regents for responding to our concerns, faculty, to assisting the CSN administration to compromise with the whatever sticking points that we have. We have a couple, but not so many anymore. In addition, I just want to make an observation. The contract, we've been negotiating the contract since 2006. Just want to make the observation to the regents that in the future, doesn't have to go this long. And thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Sarah Hunt. I'm the Assistant Dean of Behavioral Health Sciences for the UNLV School of Medicine and a psychologist. I'm grateful for the attention given to nursing education and workforce. It will help with staffing shortages of nurses on psychiatric inpatient units, and increasing nurse practitioners will do a lot for expanding access to prescribers of psychiatric medications. However, those nurse practitioners will come up against barriers when they refer patients to therapy and counseling services because we don't have enough mental health professionals in this state. As I presented to you at your last meeting, about 95% of Nevadans reside in a mental health professional shortage area. I encourage the Board of Regents to add a fourth career pathway specific to mental health careers to its workforce development initiative, which you'll hear more about tomorrow, but I can't make that meeting. So just remember, fourth pathway, mental health careers. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Any other comment in Henderson? All right, then I will call this meeting adjourned.